All right, speaking of people we love, Evan Veith of Inside Texas joining us here on Bucky and BK. Find his work on Twitter at Evan Veith. You can find his other work on InsideTexas.com, and he's kind enough to join us pretty much every Friday on this show. Evan, thanks again for the time, man. How are you?
I'm good. I always love how every time I come on these Fridays, there's some weird conversation going on.
Oh, yeah, of course.
About belts and pants or needos, whatever those are. I heard you guys talking about jelly cats. My girlfriend's in the other room. I'm like, she probably perked up when she heard that coming out on the speaker because she loves those things. But it's good to be back. I love being on the show on Fridays and just a good time with y'all.
You never know what you're going to get with this, Evan.
Yeah, there's no telling what you get on a Friday or Thursday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Monday. Who knows? Let me ask you this, Evan, about this. BK and I earlier in our show had talked about the Texas Longhorns and the running backs and short yardage. And he had this stat on Malik Brown that's just incredible about his short yardage runs for a guy that's, you know, I don't think he's a 200-pounder, you know, 190 or whatever. And this guy, like 81% of the time, is going to get you yards in the plus in short. I mean, it's incredible. And I'm looking and saying, well, if he's the starter, he's going to get every opportunity to do just that. I don't think they're looking for specialists. They're not looking for Cooper because he's a big back to be the specialist. They're looking for a guy who goes, you know, north and south and gets you what you have to. You don't need a specialist for that. And, you know, when you watch him run, he's a slasher to me. I mean, and when I say slasher, that means he can run inside the tackles. And BK's got stats to prove that just that when it comes to short yardage. So I'm not in tune to trying to find a specialist to be the short, you know, goal line, whatever. If whoever gets it done, there's not going to be anybody else coming in to get to take his place, I believe.
When you look at Sark's offenses from these 5 years that we've had here, and he's just never really been a power back specialist kind of guy. He's never felt the need to bring it in the portal, and he kind of just had Roschon Johnson already, but
right.
It wasn't like he was always relieving Bijan. Like, Bijan would get those goal line carries because how are you going to keep him away from the goal line if he's already earned you the 80 yards to get there? But I think all three of the top three running backs coming in have arguments to take some of those early or third and one or goal line or just go get me 2 yards diving into a hole carries. I think Brown, we've talked about that success rate, and that was a stat that's been going around Twitter a lot. And success rate is probably the most underrated stat in the run game that you'll find around college football. I think it's kind of teetering in between that advanced stat, but also it's pretty self-explanatory. It's just, are you successful? There's ways to easily measure that on each down. And, you know, if you're an 80% success rate in short yardage, I'd sure hope that you're the guy who's getting those carries as the power back. You know, he's really built like bowling ball is not the word because that makes him sound more round than he is, but he's short and he gets a lot of mass when he tucks. So he just kind of can run through people. And I think he's going to be a hard guy to tackle in between just because of how small he is. And that's where Hollywood Smothers, I think, on your first down runs where you're trying to get in between the tackles, is going to play a little bit better because he's just a little bit more nimble with his feet when it's really, really tight. Whereas Brown, he can put his head down and he can run outside of the tackles. I'm not sure as much about him doing, you know, a stretch zone run in between a right tackle and a right guard. That might be where Smothers really gets his work done. I think where people are underrating Smothers a bit, but you know, I'm all for Malik Brown being that goal line, go get you that 2 yards that you need. Texas had a lot of problems with that. You know, Arch Manning was probably their best goal line power guy this last year. Before that, it was probably Matthew Golden as a wide receiver, just kind of thrown to the pylon. That was your best goal line look. The tight ends, it's just never been a part of Sark's offense to have them be the focal points there at the goal line. Maybe Nick Townsend end arounds will still be part of the diet for that offense, but I think Brown has a good chance to take those carries. And I do think like Derek Cooper, he is another guy who can just be big and put his head down and go forward. So that's one where the red zone, that first game that you see before Ohio State, I believe it's Texas State to kick it off. Like, who's taking those carries? Who's in there? We've also on Inside Texas been looking at some throwing plays where you just find creative ways to get the running back in the flat one-on-one with a tackle. You just can't get him there. And that's where Smothers may be better, but it's also if you just need a guy to burst out, that's where Malik Brown just gets a full head of steam, and he's going to be hard to take down at 5'9". I believe 5'9", 195 is about where he's at right now.
Yeah, I think he's at 191 on the Texas roster.
Oh, really?
Okay. Which, yeah, I don't know if that means he's lost weight or not, but it's interesting to think about that guy potentially being your best short yardage back with those measurements. I guess kind of a follow-up to that, Evan. I am certain you have written an article about this, And if not you, Paul or Ian or somebody over, it feels like Texas fans for years have clamored for more 21 personnel or 20 personnel, right? Multiple running backs on the field at the same time. Doesn't feel like we should have to pick and choose, hey, which of these three are we going to have on the field? It feels like you could have two of those guys, and maybe that's your best offense. You think this is the year that we finally see more of that, or is Sark kind of stuck in his ways being more 11 and 12 personnel focused?
Yeah, our Ian Boyd is the guy who's really good with personnel packages and explaining to people who like football but don't quite understand what's going on where, why you'd employ these things. And I thought last year would have been a really good year to do it with Niblett a little more. And I think that was an underutilized part of Sarkisian's offense. But now this year, I mean, if you're including him, which I think in a 21 personnel discussion, he should be in there as, you know, not your traditional back, but just another guy in the backfield to be motioning around and orbiting, and he can block pretty well as well. Yeah, you've got four guys there that you want to get the ball in their hands and give them chances. So I think you're just going to see a balance in the Sark offense. I do think that you're gonna get your 11 personnel on passing downs, but there's going to be a lot of 12. Like, they're going to want to run the ball behind two tight ends and force Townsend and Masunis against linebackers and edge rushers who, in theory, they can block. That didn't happen last year. I think the team is better to do it this year. So we'll see how well that works out. But I do like the idea in your second and threes. You know, you had a successful first down. Mm-hmm. You're in that the 40s area of the field where you hunt explosives. Like, I would love to see a package where you get those two running backs in, and even as 20 personnel would intrigue me, where you take the tight end off the field and you still have Coleman, Wingo, and either Bishop or Mosley. And then the defense is looking at themselves going, I don't think we have the numbers to guard any of these guys. Like, we can't leave Coleman one-on-one if he's going deep. Like, that's just a mismatch because he's a jump ball specialist. You have to have multiple people accounting for Ryan Wingo in space. Same with Niblett if he's out there. And then you got two running backs who most of these college linebackers can't guard him in coverage as well as you'd like. So I'm interested in 20, really. I think there's going to be some weirder ones that you see come out that aren't going to be staples of the offense, but like 20 personnel and then 13 personnel with the three tight ends, because that's something that you're seeing the McVay offense do. And, you know, Sark loves talking to Sean McVay about scheme and things like that. And Texas has four tight ends that you can throw out there at a time. So watch out for that. Either taking random, not random, but spots on the field that you're accustomed just always being there in 11 or 12, watch for them to really manipulate the defenses with some odd looks on the personnel side of things.
Yeah, and they need to do that early in the season. This can't be game five and them experimenting. They need to do it, you know, when the summer comes and they're ready for game one against Texas State. They need to be implementing these things in that game, the second game, the third game, and not finding out where they are game five. And we're all wondering, what are they trying to do? They need to know what they're doing. This team needs to start faster offensively from the jump, you know, this year.
Yeah. I think with Ohio State, because it's such that monumental game, and really looking at this schedule, the more and more you see these teams, you're like, Ohio State kind of feels like a must win in week two because of the way this Texas schedule, you just don't want to go into the SEC with nine games and the teams you're playing down a loss. But I do think they're going to have their opening scripts and ideas for two drives that they're not going to show anything of in that first game. But at some point, Sark, and we've been talking about this on Twitter, I think Crane and Cohn had a really good discussion about the best play callers, where Sark is someone who gets stolen from a lot, but he has struggled a little bit in his mid-game adaptations and knowing what to call late in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. So that's where you need to show that your players are comfortable on the field game one to do these more advanced ideas and run the motions and go into these uncomfortable formation sets that we were just talking about earlier. If that is able to be installed in week one and throughout the summer, and then you can still kind of hide stuff, get that win in week one, hide stuff for those first two series against Ohio State. And, you know, you score 10 points early against Ohio State. Think about how different that would be to last year's game where you didn't get to 10 anyway, but that seven came late. And that first half was just, if you had 7 points in that first half, the vibe going in the locker room, the confidence of Arch Manning, it's so different. And I think things are different this year. The spot you're playing at is in Austin. You have Arch Manning year two as a starter. But like you said, Bucky, they just have to come out of the gates faster.
Yeah. Evan Veith of Inside Texas joining us here on Bucky and BK. Last football question for me today, Evan, is about the offensive line, right? I mean, have you heard anything? I know spring practice is over. We're kind of in a lull when it comes to team activities here. But How you feeling about the offensive line? Any updates on Lawrence Seymour? And is that still the biggest concern for this offense in your eyes?
You know, I don't know how much fans are going to like or dislike this, but I think there's more of a competition going on behind the scenes than people are giving it credit for. I think Andre Kojo, however he wants us to pronounce it, is a name that people are completely kind of sweeping to the side. If you remember, I mean, Baker was probably out in front last year, but when Kojo got injured, he was there in the right tackle competition. And you almost wonder if he had had another good 2 weeks, if one of those two ends up at left guard to start the season, then their season's very different. This guy is one of those Kyle Flood big human beings. Got to campus at 17 years old. I believe he's still only 20 in like year four. He's a giant player and is going to be a real mover in the run game. So either way, I think he could be a good sixth offensive lineman. But given that Seymour's coming in late and Kojo's also recovering from his injury, they're kind of starting in the same phase. And Baker's also learning the new position at guard. Siani, I think the returns have been overall, it started slow but good at right tackle. You feel like he's probably going to earn that spot this year. But I don't think the guard spots are as solidified as you might think. They like Baker. He's a really smart kid, a really great interviewer. You can tell he understands the game at a high level. Your concern is, can he play in the trenches and be a big mover at guard, which hopefully they don't ask him to do that too much, just given his size and who he is. But, you know, look out for left guard. I don't think that's so solidified. And either way, that's what you want to hear. You want to know that the team has six linemen, and really seven is the number that you can be comfortable with. Finding that seventh is a little bit dicey. That might be Dylan Sikorski, who's getting some run as center. Also could be a backup guard option, but I'm not sure I want him starting week one.
And the center never moves. He's staying exactly where he is, and nothing happens with him.
Yeah. I mean, Connor Robertson, the goal is for him to play every snap this year. That's the hope. And Flood's done that guard rotation in the past. Maybe they do that. If you remember week one last year, you know, Neto and Stroh both played. That was the most Umeazulu really played all year. And I thought he looked better than Stroh did. And I thought he should have ended up getting to play more. I don't think we're ever going to know fully what happened there. But Flood has been doing the two guard thing for 4 years now. Mm-hmm. I think he'll kind of just like brush that aside as like, oh, we have our line. He's going to try to figure out what he's got in week one at that left guard spot. Given that both Seymour and Kojo are on the old schedule of you start coming in the summer, that is now by the wayside. You need to be here in January doing well. So, you know, Kojo's been recovering. Seymour's not sitting by the wayside and just being idle while he's getting his degree at Western Kentucky. They're both going to be pushing for that spot. But I would look out for more competition in the O-line than I think people are giving credit for. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully they figure out the offensive line by week eight this year. I don't think I'm asking for much. It took until the eighth game last year to actually get the best five on the field. But I digress. Evan Veith of Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com. The only baseball question I have is, who's the real UT? I don't want any preview. I want 5 minutes, Evan, about – I'm so tired of that already. The series hadn't started.
Who had the logo first?
Oh, my God.
Who was throwing it up first? I actually don't really know, like, the actual answer to that. I don't know which side's going to be happy about it, but I really could not care less.
It's amazing how much people on both sides. Tennessee fans are very thin-skinned, but there are some Texas fans who are seemingly taking the bait on them. So, anyways, this series itself. Look, Texas is the better team, Evan, but I always say desperation's a hell of a drug. I mean, the Longhorns are a lock to make the tournament. Barring a total collapse, they're probably a lock to be a top eight seed. Tennessee, I think they've done enough, but the bracketologists out there think that they still have some work to do to get into the field. Are you worried? Look, Texas is just one game over 500 on the road this year. I think Tennessee is the more desperate team. I don't know if this is a trap series because Tennessee's good, but are you a little worried about Texas this weekend?
I think the average viewer might think this is a more lopsided matchup than it really is. You know, Texas is a great team this year, and they're going to continue winning games like this, but they win a lot of close games. It's not always these, you know, the Friday game against Mississippi State was great, but then they go and have two really close matchups the next day. And I know they won by a significant margin on Sunday, but right, like Brett Crossland gets a call he shouldn't be getting with the bases loaded and the best hitter on Mississippi State's team up in the sixth inning. And that one swing in that game is completely different. And if ABS is a thing, then that game is very different. It's pretty ironic that you saw a manager get fired ejected while complaining about the strike zone. And then they just happen to announce something that they've been working on for a while the next day. But
yep.
What you're looking at with this Tennessee team is a good lineup, 1 through 8, kind of similar to Texas. They've had trouble finding that last spot. It's funny. It's between their catcher and center field spot, because their catcher can also platoon as a center fielder, which you don't see very often. It's like Dalton Varsho for my MLB fans, but they're struggling to find that ninth spot, but those first eight are good hitters. And they're, especially at home, they're going to hit the ball around the park. And you're talking about Henry Ford, who was one of the top transfer additions and top targets this year. And, you know, Elander is in his first season coaching. There was always going to be some growing pains without Vitello, but overall, this is still a good team. It's just not Tennessee that was making the title runs these last 2 years that you're accustomed to. I think where the advantage Texas has and holds is on that Saturday matchup, in theory, right? Ruger Riojas hasn't been getting the run support this year. I don't want to botch the stat fully, but in SEC play, I believe they're 2-6 when he starts. And he hasn't been perfect, but he hasn't been 2-6 type of bad. And those aren't all his losses. It's a lot of bad bullpen management early in the year. And then the bats just not showing up recently. Whereas Harrison and Valantis, I think they've lost 2 games combined all year. It's like 21-2. So you're looking at a good Friday starter in Tegan Coons, who is going to battle Valantis through 5 or 6 innings. And that's going to be, it's going to be a low scoring game tonight, I'd assume. But then you get to Saturday and it's, you know, the Saturday, Sunday guys, Blanco and Mack for Tennessee have been very up and down this year, and they haven't been stretching the innings as much. Blanco, that's what he's been good at. He's been an inning eater, but Riojas is the better pitcher on paper. When you look at advanced stats and what he can do with a baseball in his hands, it's just the runs haven't been there. And he's gotten in trouble on batted balls in play. Really. He's given up the doubles. He's given up the strung singles. He's still striking out batters at a good rate. Still not walking them very much, but when they get contact and hit to the gaps, he gets in trouble. So if they get through 3 innings of his start and they haven't given up a run and they're in the lead, I think Texas has very easy sweep potential, given that they might have won on Friday with a Valantis start, which that's what they've been doing all year. But it really comes down to that Ruger Riojas start. Are you going to be able to keep that momentum if you won on Friday? Or if you didn't win on Friday, like, can you go and win a game with Riojas on the mound when he needs you to do it the most? And this team needs you, you know, one more series when they lock that top 8 seed, I'd assume.
Yeah,
they probably get that with Missouri no matter what. But let's not beat around the bush here. Let's just go and get that series win right here and do it in Knoxville, in a place that's going to be a rocking environment, a lot of fun. And they're going to make it a big game, even though, you know, they're not quite the same team they have in the past few years.
Yeah, I think this is important, a series for Ruger, as it is all year. I mean, he's got to continue to hold teams down. And as you said, offensively, Texas has got to pick it up for him early in the game. But he's got to show that he will be ready when it's time for these regional series to, you know, that he can be counted on, period. Whether it's a, you know, a 3-2 game, a 5-4 game, that he's got to be able to hold the fort himself too and continue to do that. Yeah, they've got to give him some run support early, but this is a big weekend for him, I believe.
Yeah, and I think you could have said that last weekend as well when he pitched phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, really outside of one swing, he was untouchable at times. And I wrote an article, I believe, 2 or 3 weeks back, kind of when Texas was in that slump. It was, I believe, after the not right after A&M, but after the Vanderbilt series, saying, you know, these are the 5 guys that if Texas is going to go on a run, it's because they played better to end the year. And, of course, the most important players of the team are probably Valantis and Tinney and Robbins, but we know what we're going to get from them. The most important player for me in this Texas run is Ruger Riojas. If you have 2 of the best starting pitchers in the nation going at one time, which at individual points in the season, Riojas has been seen as the best, Valantis has been seen as the best. They're still 1-2 in FIP, FIP, which is fielding independent pitching. Basically, how good are you at striking out players while limiting walks and home runs? They're the 2 best in the SEC, and I want to say in the nation among the premier schools at least. So if they have those 2 at the top, like you're looking at Cade Anderson from last year with LSU, the way they were pitching on their run, it's hard to beat any team who 2 out of 3 series can bring out the better pitcher, and clearly the better pitcher, a top 5 in the nation. Yeah. If that's what you're getting from Ruger Riojas, and then even if just 2 of that quartet of Borba, Mendoza, Becerra, and Rodriguez are on their game, Texas can win a lot of 5-2 ball games with Sam Cozar coming out of the pen behind Valantis and Riojas. And you know, don't discredit Luke Harrison for giving you 5 innings of 2-earned-run baseball. That is so valuable in college baseball.
Yeah, Evan Veith of Inside Texas joining us. Funny enough, Tennessee is just 2-6 in Friday night games this season. So even though they're obviously trotting out their best pitcher tonight, the Longhorns had some struggles early, but obviously since Valantis took over on Friday, that hasn't been the case. So hopefully Texas can set that tone and then still have those pitching advantages on Saturday and Sunday. Last question for me, Evan, not really a Longhorn question, but I saw you tweet about this, so I kind of know how you feel. The NCAA tournament is officially expanding to 76 teams starting next year. Any redeeming qualities in your eyes, or are we massacring what was a perfect thing?
I mean, I think the only redeeming quality is that it is hard to complain about more basketball and more sports. And I think that's the leading selling point of these suits for both football and basketball. Hey, you're getting better, right? It's postseason, but you know, the round of 76 just doesn't have the same ring to it. I thought the 68 expansion was already kind of odd. It didn't really end up mattering all that much. It actually helped out Texas this past year, but you know, you look at the teams that were just the first four that were left out, not even the four behind them, talking about Auburn and Oklahoma, who were what 11 win SEC teams and a all right, I believe San Diego State team. Like, it's not the kind of people who deserve to be playing for more basketball. There's a reason you have the NIT, and I know people disrespect the NIT, but like, that's where those teams should be going, because they don't deserve to be competing the way that the conference champions from these mid-major conferences do, or the teams who've just been playing well throughout the year. If you're either not a top 30 team or not a conference champion, it's hard for me to say that you just should be in the tournament. And you know what? That's probably the same way you could look at Texas from last year. And they made it fun, and they made a run, and they've generated a lot of money for the program, a lot of fun for Sean Miller. But if they really think this is going to stop coaches from getting fired, like, oh, because my job is more secure because there's 76 teams and I get in, like, you've done the opposite, actually. If you don't get in, there's no chance you're sticking around. Yeah. If you do get in, you have to win round one. Like, you have to win when there's 76 teams. You can't be one of the 38 that's going home early. You're not a top 38 team in the nation. I don't want you as my head coach. So I think there's just a lot of misconstrued ideas from the coaches on both sports, basketball and football. And football, I can talk even longer about. And of course, it's a TV money thing, but it's just the bracket looks weird. You're ruining the 12-5 matchup that has always been the most fun game in round one, the most likely to get an upset. Even those 4-13s feel a little bit weirder now. The play-ins are just odd. I don't like it. I don't think a lot of people like it. You do a poll of 1,000 college basketball fans who really watch, and I bet 22 out of the 1,000 say that they like this expansion. It's kind of where sports is going nowadays. Need more playoffs.
It's just more. It doesn't mean it's better because it's more. It's just more.
And NBA wants to have, you know, 20 teams make a type of playoff. The MLB expanded their playoff. You know, soccer is not the same thing, but they expanded their UEFA Champions League. It's just every single league wants everything to be more teams get a chance to compete for a title, even though every year it feels like less and less teams deserve to compete for that title.
It's all about the dollar bills, as we know. And, I look forward to watching Bishop Sycamore play South Harmon Institute of Technology next year in the round.
Coach by Drewski, right?
Yeah, exactly. Evan, great stuff as always, my friend. Really appreciate the time, and enjoy the weekend. Hopefully we get the chance to chop it up next week.
Thanks, Evan.
See you then. Thank you, guys.
All right, there he goes. Evan Veith, Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com. I forgot to let Evan promote Inside Texas, so I'll tell you to – check out the great work that they do. Fantastic people. They do a tremendous job covering the University of Texas. I'm a subscriber. I think you should be too. And yeah, this UT baseball series is interesting. Again, Texas is the better team. The records, the standings, the rankings, everything kind of shows that. But Texas hasn't been great on the road, which is why it's so important to secure a top 8 seed so you don't have to play any more true road games after this weekend. And Tennessee's desperate. They are a bubble team in the NCAA tournament. They have a losing record in conference play. That place is tough to play. It's also a bandbox there, Buck. That field is small. The ball carries. So home run, like if you're Texas pitchers, you got to keep the ball down so you don't let them hit a bunch of home runs because they've got some power in that lineup. But I think I'm a little more nervous than most Texas fans about this because I would say desperation's a hell of a drug. Texas is in a good spot right now. Tennessee is very, very desperate to win a series.
Yeah, like I said, I think Ruger needs to have a really – this is really important going into after this series. So I think he needs to really do well, the team needs to do a good job to support him. Give him a little bit of a lead, you know?
You're right. No, he has not gotten a bunch of runs of support. It makes me wonder if his teammates even like him.
Yeah, do they like? Do they come to his birthday parties?
Do people hate Ruger Riojas? Like, why don't they hit when he's pitching? They hit when Volantis is there. They hit when Luke Harrison is out there. But
come on, man,
they didn't hit for him on Friday. Now on Saturdays, they're not hitting
like
for him.
What the guy, like him?
I know. I know he's got weird hair. Well, the issue is, and Ruger told us this earlier in the season, that he hasn't washed his hair in like over a year.
That's nasty.
So maybe he just like smells really bad and no one wants to be around him. So it's like, we're not going to support a weirdo like that. You know what? Yeah, you get some shampoo, dude.
Yeah, that's overly weird. That's too much. Stop doing that.
That is overly weird.
Just have a shower. Shower. I don't know about the shave. Leave the mustache, but do something with that hair. Throw some soap in that hair every once in a while.
Yeah, please. We've got a very special guest joining us here in a moment. Before we chop it up with Matt King, we will give a quick round of sponsor shout-outs here, Buck.
Say hello to our friends over at Woods Comfort Systems for 70 years in Central Texas. Air conditioning, heating, of course, and now they do plumbing. Trust them for your indoor and outdoor plumbing needs. And as I said, get their technicians over there because soon it's going to be hot as you know what. And they don't want you fumbling around. They definitely don't want me messing around with the air conditioning system. Okay, yes, BK, I can put the filter in. But if my air conditioning is not exactly where I want it and it skips a little bit of a beat and it's going a little bit higher than it's supposed to be, I want my air conditioning working properly. So I call on the folks at Woods Comfort Systems. And they always tell me, Buck, do us a favor. Don't touch anything upstairs. Okay, we're going to teach you how to do the filters, but we're not going to teach you anything else. Okay, so leave everything up to them. 70 years in Central Texas. Woods Comfort Systems, nobody does it better.
WoodsComfortSystems.com, 512-842-5066. Now, you got to hire a task rabbit to change your air filter. Don't lie to the people. We know how you operate.
I know what to do. Hey, dude, all you do is go in there and you snap, take the old one out. You don't even shake it or do anything in. You throw it in the recycling bin there or whatever, if it goes in the recycle. Because there's all kinds of stuff. There's trash, there's recycling. Hell, I don't know half the stuff that goes in whatever. So you do that, you turn the little twisters on, you put it back in. Push it in there and it's okay. You don't shake it around. You don't do anything to it. You don't touch any buttons.
No buttons.
No buttons. Button. Never touch buttons.
Real quick, a shout out to SendTextTickets.com. You touch buttons here. You just log on from your phone or computer to get tickets to any sporting event or concert or festival or Broadway show. Anything that you want to attend here in the great state of Texas, SendText Tickets has your seats waiting for you. Don't forget to use our promo code SendText10. If you type that in at checkout, you're going to get 10% off of any ticket purchase from our great friends, SendTextTickets.com. All right, very special guest joining us here, a guy that we've been talking about a lot, a guy that you and I have had the chance to talk to off air multiple times, but this is the first time we've gotten to chop it up with him on the show, the founder and CEO of GoBundance, the host of the Matt King podcast, and the leader and founder and creator of the Ride Project, which we've been talking about for a long time here on Bucky and BK. Matt King joining us here on the show. Matt, it's great to see you, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. I definitely am going to have Bucky come over and change my air filters. I mean, he did such a good job of knowing which recycler garbage can to throw it into. So I have great confidence that he's the man for the job.
Dude, I bet you know all of that stuff. I bet your wife has you down pat on don't throw that bottle in that trash can. I throw stuff in. And all of a sudden, I come back in the kitchen, and the bag's sitting in there. She goes, how many times did I tell you that bag does not go in the recycle? It goes in the trash. I'm like, I mean, I got things in my mind. My mind is a terrible thing as it is. But when you're telling me about, it's all trash to me. I mean, I'm trying to do what I can for America, just like you're about to do for America too, Matt, which is, you know, the RideProject.com is really special. I know it's special to you, and you're trying to raise $1 million to give away $1 million throughout your ride and to help communities, not only in the state of Texas. You've done so many things in this state, but to get outside of this state of Texas and a 2,000 mile journey, and in every state, you're going to try to find communities or individuals that need help. That's just amazing, man.
Yeah, look, man, I think the thing that makes America so beautiful is these small communities. I mean, it was, you know, my grandfather owned a plumbing business and my uncle owned the electrical shop, and his cousin owned the hardware store. It was like, that was what America was built on. And then big corporations come in and flyovers come in and the world changes. And look, Amazon is the greatest thing ever. Like, I love being able to order something and that day or the next day it's at my door. But there's still people inside of those little communities that have been counted down or have been dealt a bad hand. And I just, I don't think the big organizations are doing enough to help those people that are facing adversity. Mm-hmm. And so I had the brilliant idea of like, why don't we be the people to do it? Like, we can sit here and talk about it, but like, somebody's got to help them. So why not us? And why not do it on a bike? And so starting on May 27th, we ride from Mexico all the way up to Canada. Myself, I'm the only one riding the entire journey. It'll be 150 miles a day for 13 days in a row. But we've got over 20 people signed up to ride with us at various points to just help carry the water, help support, help cheer us on, help battle the hills, help battle the headwinds. And more than anything, guys, help find the people in these communities and just help them be seen and help them feel loved and help them just for a moment see some glimmer of hope and some joy in their lives.
You know, throughout the whole journey, I mean, taking time to get your rest, that's got to be important, man. I mean, it's just, you don't just go and get like a quick half hour nap. I mean, you have to rest. How are you going to get an opportunity to meet these people? It's going to be less rest and a lot of time spent shaking hands and saying hello to communities and folks, individuals?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, Bucky. And I go back to like, I'm treating this like a deployment. I was never brave enough to be in the military. I love the men and women that defend this country. I was never brave enough to do that. But I'm really treating this like a deployment. And I go back to when I was growing up, there was a motivational video on YouTube that I would listen to constantly when I was working out. And it talked about how they interviewed 50 Cent. He was on the scene of a movie. And they said, you've got the water business, you got the soundtrack, you got this movie, like 50, when do you sleep? And what he said was, sleep is for those people who are broke. I've got an opportunity to make my dreams a reality. And I'm just treating it like this, man, like 13 days, if I get 4 hours a day of sleep, I'll be good. Like, this isn't my moment to sleep. This is my moment to provide hope, to provide joy, to provide opportunity to people that don't have it right now. I'll sleep later. I can sleep later. But, you know, I think the other thing I would just recognize is like, life is finite. Like, there's no doubt about it. We're all going to die. Like, it sucks. It's terrible to talk about, but it is finite. We just don't know when our number is going to get called. And so I'm making sure that I do everything I can to live my life to the fullest and provide as much impact to the people I come in contact with throughout the journey. I've got three amazing young kids, a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 1-year-old. I want them to see their dad, who wasn't a cyclist 5.5 months ago, ride his bike all the way across the country and give away $1 million. Because if they see that, what will they be capable of doing in their lifetime? And if people follow along on the journey and they see after riding for 10 hours in a day, we have time to go to this small diner and talk to the waitress and find out she's a single mother with no car and give her the keys to a new car, what will they be inspired to do the next time they go to a restaurant? Maybe it's just say hi. Maybe it's to give a handshake. Maybe it's to give a bigger tip. I don't know. But I just think the world is busy, but life is finite. And so I think really we have to find time to slow down a little bit and make time for the people around us, the people we come in contact with. So, Bucky, I keep telling people, sleep, I'll do that when I'm dead. I don't need to sleep right now.
Plenty of time to sleep then.
Yeah, well, it's truly inspirational. Matt King joining us here on Bucky and BK. Well, you mentioned it, Matt. Like, you're not a lifelong cyclist. You're not a Tour de France guy or anything like that. You just started training. So what's the regimen been like and how are you kind of preparing yourself for this 2,000-mile journey across the country?
Well, I'm a big believer in hiring coaches. I mean, we're talking to one of the best running back coaches of all time on this. Like, we know the value of coaches, right? So I hired a coach when I set out to do this 5.5 months ago. He's training for the Olympics on the bike. So clearly he knows cycling. And he's got me like on a strict routine. Usually it's somewhere between 3 and 6 hours a day on the bike. But because in addition to the bike, I run businesses and I have a family, most of my training takes place between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m. I don't know whoever called that thing on the bike a seat, but that is the worst name for that thing. That thing is the most uncomfortable thing I have ever experienced in my entire life. But yeah, man, just putting in the work, following the experts, asking a lot of questions, you know, failing a little bit along the way, BK. Like, I've taken some falls because I didn't know how to unclip the shoes, but I think that's how we learn in life. Like, you've got to be willing to fail and get back up. But it's been a lot of training. It's been mostly 20 to 35 hours a week on the bike. And just putting in the time, putting in the effort, getting the body right, back-to-back days. Some outdoor training camps. We really mimicked like what a football team would do. Like, if it works for them, it should work for us. So we did 2 training camps. We've done back-to-back 105-mile days. We did a training camp 2 was 150 followed by 121. So like, myself, my team, we're all putting in the reps to be prepared to do this at the end of May.
Spiritually, it's got to be something special for you. I mean, deep down, I mean, you had to make a lot of sacrifice to your diet, things like that, getting the right kind of rest. And once again, rest is important when you're saying you're getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So you can't be jacking around at midnight playing games and doing stuff. You got to be asleep and getting ready to get up just in a couple hours now. How about diet wise? Maybe this is for BK to help BK out. Are you on a pretty good diet where you're not just throwing stuff in just for the sake of doing it? Do you have a regimented diet for on a nightly basis?
You know, the best part about it, Bucky, is I'm working out so much, I can eat whatever the heck I want to eat. I can have a Blizzard from Dairy Queen. Now I can have a cheeseburger from Whataburger. Like, I can do whatever I want, and I still can't gain weight because I'm working so much. But really what I've focused on for this next 3 weeks leading up to the ride is really foods that are going to help keep my inflammation levels low. That's going to be like the biggest issue is inflammation. So really cutting out a lot of the sugars. Unfortunately, because there's so much energy being exerted, the carb intake has to be really high. I'm not a huge carb guy outside of this. So it's a lot of pastas and just a lot of like carbs to try to recover. And to your point, get that rest those muscles and the body needs. But really right now I'm focused on like an anti-inflammatory diet to just keep inflammation levels low until we go out there and hit the road.
And your wife, your support system, what is she? I mean, she's got to be all in. It can't be just a little bit. Well, what about this? What about if you fall? How all in is she? All in?
Ben, my wife is the most amazing human, Bucky, because of two things. One, she's the biggest cheerleader, but two, she's always my biggest critic. When I went to her and told her what I was going to do, first thing she said to me was, "You can't do this." And I think there was a part of her that believed it, but I think there was a bigger part of her that knows I'm the kind of guy that likes to keep receipts and that I use that as fuel. I like that little chip on my shoulder. And so she's done an amazing job of supporting me, but she's also found really good opportunities to kick me in the shins and remind me just, you know, like if I really want to hear her opinion to ask it, and she'll remind me how far I have to go yet and how much of a not cyclist I am and all the things I need to do better at.
So once this is done, she will hear for this. She'll hear about this for years to come. This is everlasting right here. Once you do this,
it is. And she's going to join us for a couple of days on the journey. Like I said, we've got like 21 GoBundance guys joining us at various points. I mean, these are guys literally putting their life on hold to fly to our route all across the country. Some of which, Bucky, have said they won't even get on a bike. Some of which, BK, have said, I will be drinking vodka sodas in the RV and cheering you on from the air conditioning. But they understand what it looks like to show up for people doing something big. I mean, we've raised $461,000 as of yesterday so far on our mission to raise $1 million. And I'm just incredibly humbled. We've got people that I've never met donating $25, $50. A guy last week donated $100,000. Like, I've never fundraised for anything in my life. So to see somebody donate $100,000, I about damn near fell off the bike. But I think that's what happens when you're willing to put a flag in the ground and make a stand for something bigger than yourself, is like the world comes to support you and people want to see you win. And the cool part is like people also want to see me fail. And I'm excited about that. Like I want people to not believe in it. I like that.
Keeping receipts, right?
Keeping receipts.
You got the ultimate scoreboard when you get this thing done. TheRideProject.com for more information and to donate. And you kind of answered this earlier, Matt, but like, why this? Because look, you're a philanthropic guy. This is not your first effort into something like this, but you can make an impact across communities with money, with things that aren't as difficult and don't require as much training as cycling 2,000 miles from Mexico to Canada. Like, what was the inspiration and the idea behind like this exact feat?
Yeah. So there's a fellow Austinite. He's a friend of mine. His name is Matthew Johnson. He ran across Texas and he did it twice, and he did it to raise money for veterans to get them back into community. And last year when he was raising money, I helped him with some of his fundraising efforts. And then I went and ran with him for a day. And that was on the heels of Bucky hounding me to donate a golf cart to that golf tournament of his, you know, from Tractor Supply. That dude's relentless, that Bucky guy. But, I just had this weird calling to be like more of in service to people I didn't know. Like, I'm genuinely a very service-based human, but not necessarily to strangers. And when I was out there with Matt Johnson, I just was like, man, this guy put his entire life on hold for 19 days to run from Oklahoma to Mexico. Like, that's insane. And I left there and I just said, like, what can I do? And BK, the first idea I had, because running is not, I'm not opposed to running, but I've ruptured my Achilles tendon twice. And so I'm not eager to run. So the first idea I had was I'll ride my bike across Texas. And honestly, BK, I looked at myself in the mirror. I was like, you coward. That guy just ran across the state. You're going to get on a damn bike. Like, you might as well just say you're going to drive across the state. Like, what's the point of that? And so my immediate next thought was like, I'll go from Mexico to Canada. And my initial thought was I'll raise $250,000. And I talked to one of my friends, a mentor, one of the co-founders of GoBundance. And I said, hey, like, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And he's like, 250? Does that number scare you? I'm like, I think we can do it. He's like, well, then why don't you do a million? I'm like, well, I don't know if we can do that. He's like, well, then that's the number. I'm like, you know what? You're right. That's the number. Like, do things that scare you. And so it just kind of was really inspired by watching what Matt did. And then kind of creating my own journey based off of feedback, intuition, fear. Like, I wasn't excited to ride a bike. I could tell you my bike looks really good hanging on the wall in the garage. It doesn't necessarily look as good with me sitting on it, but, you know, I just really lean into the discomfort, and I recognize, BK, that oftentimes the magic we're seeking in our life lies on the other side of the work we've been unwilling to do. And I have been unwilling to show up for people that I don't know and give whatever I have to help them. And so this was really like, you want to keep cowering from it, or are you going to step up and do it? And might as well do it in a big way.
Well, you do things in a big way. And your work now, I think you've been over to see the Berg Center, the boys at the Berg Center, and see what they're all about. They're doing some unbelievable work over there to help those 32 boys that have really, you know, through no fault of their own, ended up at a place like that, you know, as wards of the state. And once they hit 18, they got to go. You know, you can't stick around there until you're 21. You got to leave. So, but for folks like you to have been a big part of that and are being a big part of that, that's important. And what you're doing right now, Matt, is something very, it's more of a lesson to a lot of folks. I know it's the physical part is for you. The mental part is for you and your family. But what you're doing for folks that are listening today and folks that will meet you along the way is really, really special, because that goes, it's kind of generational. It'll go through. They'll do something for their kids. Their kids will see them do something that's very special. And that's what we need to more of in this country, not just in this state, but in this country, just to pass things on. So, as you said, you know, there, you know, we get into AI, we get into all these high tech things, but the simple things of you know, the plumber, you know, the store owner, the local business. I mean, we got to make sure those people still can survive and they can still thrive too.
Absolutely. And the people who have just been dealt a bad hand, like to your point, the Berg Center, man, what an incredible place. We went and did a give back there on the first training camp. We met a 14-year-old boy whose mother's in prison. Never met his father. His sister's been adopted, so he can't talk to her until she's 18 and he's 18, assuming he can find her. Yes. And here's a boy by himself, 6 hours from where he grew up, trying to manage anger in an environment with no friends, no family, totally, totally alone. And it just, it's a reminder that, like, perspective is really powerful. And when I look now at the headwind or the hill or the mileage for the day, I'm like, man, this is hard, but it's by choice. That boy's life, he didn't choose that. No kid should have to go through that shit. So to be able to show up for people in those moments, I think is just really special.
It is. And well, thank you once again, buddy.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I appreciate you guys, man. Yeah. And hopefully Texas can win a national championship in football this year, Bucky.
Yeah, well, they're on the right path right now, but they got a lot of work to do. You know, just like you've had to work at what you're doing, they've got a lot. In a short period of time, it's coming. It's just around the corner. These couple months, that football season will be right upon us, just like your ride is just about upon you, my friend.
Not a couple months. He's got a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Three weeks. Matt,
appreciate you guys.
Yeah, I was going to say theRideProject.com. Hopefully we get the chance to talk to you either right before or maybe at some point during the trip if you've got the energy. But you know, therideproject.com to donate. But for folks who kind of want to follow along or learn more about everything, you know, social media, what's the best way to learn more about the ride?
Yeah, if they go to the website, either The Ride Project or backtheride.com, either one will take them to the same landing page. They can find links to social media, YouTube, all that stuff. We'll have a YouTube video drop every single day documenting the day prior. So starting on the 26th, there will be a YouTube video a day for 14 days. And if folks are lucky, they might even see Bucky get on a bike for a couple miles. We'll see if we can get him. We'll see if we can get him out there pedaling a little bit.
You know that wonderful electric cart that you got for the boys over there. You may see me in that and having somebody drive me around close to you, but I don't know.
That's called golf, Bucky. That's not called biking. That's called golf.
Yeah.
You'll see Buck on the cart and I'll be with your boys drinking vodka sodas. Matt, this was great, man. Thanks for all you guys do. And thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. I appreciate you.
We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, all guys.
Right. There you go. Matt King, therideproject.com. Great guy, great cause. And yeah, he talks about other people putting his life on hold. He is putting his life on hold. He's a father of three young kids. He works. He runs a couple of businesses. And he is stopping everything that he's doing to ride 2,000 miles across the country to help those who need it. Truly inspirational. And, again, an incredible cause and a great way to support folks around the country. TheRideProject.com for more information.
No doubt about it, man. He's a fantastic guy.
And hopefully, I don't know if he'll have the energy to do it, but like, man, I want to talk to him in the middle of his journey, just get like a status update. Like,
well, it'd be nice to see, to talk about some of the people that he's met along the way, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's going to do that. He's going to want to do that for sure.
It's really cool, man. Really, really cool. And you know what else is cool about it?
What's that?
I don't have to do it.
It's cool. It's really cool that he's doing it and not us.
I've donated on therideproject.com and I probably will again, but I'm not doing 2,000 miles. Nobody wants that, by the way.
Yeah. As he said, folks, $25, $10, whatever you've got, therideproject.com, and it all make a difference along his route. It really, really will. 100%. I mean, Mexico to Canada, $150 a day.
Yeah. I don't know, like, with all the times I've been on a bike in my life, if I've totaled 150 miles, and he's doing that in one day, and he's doing that 13 days in a row. How's he getting back? Is he biking? But now, probably.
No.
Hey, you walking back or what? What's the deal?
Spirit. He ain't flying Spirit, or he won't get back either.
No, he ain't. All right, we'll get to the BBK news in a moment. The latest on the Mike Vrabel, Diana Russini story that keeps on giving. And also, if we have time, a little road rage incident out of Dallas, which
nice.
I want to get the Bucks' thoughts on who's in the right and who's in the wrong here. But before we get to that, how about another round of sponsor shout outs?
Folks, our good friends over at Hat Creek Burger Company. It's a great place for food, great place for folks. And it is really a wonderful place to bring your kids. They've got a wonderful playscape there at all the Hat Creek Burgers. And mom and dad, if you'd like to have a little margarita at the end of the day while they enjoy their hamburger, their fries, their shakes. BK, Wednesday was a Hat Creek Burger Day. I'm making a Friday a Hat Creek Burger Day too. Hey,
going twice?
Yeah. Well, if Matt can do it, why can't I do it? Look at me. I'm my body tight. I'm trying to gain weight. So if I want to gain weight, I need a double, maybe some of those queso fries, but I can't have nuggies. I can't have it all. But it is a shake day. I'm feeling good. And you know, my favorite over here is a strawberry with the cherry on the top. That's what I'm looking for over at Hat Creek Burger. Folks, they got only 30 locations in the state of Texas, born and bred right here, 2008, right in Austin, Texas. As I said, the great playgrounds. But what it is all about really there is they've got those accessories. That's the fries and everything. Folks, the burgers are absolutely delicious at Hat Creek Burger Company.
Yes, indeed. Shout out to Hat Creek. Also, shout out to Qualis Roofing and Construction, the big Q. Something's wrong with your roof, or you want to make sure that nothing is wrong with your roof. We've had some crazy storms here over the last few weeks, and we might have some more coming up over these next few days. Reach out to our friends at Qualis Roofing and Construction. Look, your insurance companies recommend that you get your roof inspected twice a year. Qualis says you don't need to do twice, but once a year, probably a good idea. This is one of the most important parts of your home. This is the thing that protects you and your loved ones. Qualis will come out to your place for free, and they will inspect your roof, and they will let you know, hey, everything's good, or maybe not. It might be time to look at this. If you've been a homeowner, you're in a house that was built in the 70s, the 80s, the 50s, whatever, and just there hasn't been work done on the roof for a long time, reach out to these guys. They'll come out to your place for free. And again, if you have them out for a free inspection, they will buy you a Texas Longhorns t-shirt. That's how much they want your business. They are fantastic people. They've been around. They're going to stay around. They've got a great crew here in Central Texas. They also have a crew up in the Metroplex as well. More than 700 five-star reviews online, A-plus rated by the BBB. Everything you want when you're having people working on your home, Qualis Roofing and Construction, they check those boxes. Plus, they have drones, too, that'll go look at your
roof. There you go.
I love the drones. QualisGC.com, 512-257-0033 for Qualis Roofing and Construction.
Somebody said that thing is not a seat. It's a saddle.
Yeah, the bike seat is not comfortable. I don't understand how throughout all of these years of human life and all of the great inventions that we've had as a society, how we haven't been able to come up with a more comfortable bike seat.
Because we have Gold Bond powder. That's what keeps Gold Bond powder those people in business.
It's like the inventor of that just, they wanted to screw you.
Yeah, that's not a comfortable. And those type of cycles, that thing is even smaller.
Yeah.
In that area, you know what I mean? In that area.
You can put a little cushion on it, but it ain't doing the trick.
No, man.
I don't know why someone isn't like, let's put like a really, like a relax the back, like cushiony, like.
Oh, yeah, with a massage in the back on your neck.
Yeah. Instead, why do I have to have this like hard? Yeah,
that's called plastic. A car. It's called a car.
Why is this hard plastic sticking up my ass right now? Like, I don't need this.
No, that's what you get for a car. Yeah.
I don't get it. That may be the hardest part of the entire ride is sitting on that damn seat for as long as.
It's got to be.
And that's about to do it. That is crazy. All right. The BBK news today. The gift that keeps on giving, Mike Vrabel and Diana Russini. I mean, every time you think we might be done with this story, some old video, some old picture.
No more pictures.
Oh, well, we go back to 2021. Wow. Where a video has gone viral within the last couple of days. Mike Vrabel and former NFL insider Diana Russini renting a boat together. And not only were they doing that, she was pregnant at the time. Here's a little TMZ clip for you here. There's Mike Vrabel walking on some boat dock somewhere. There's Diana Russini up ahead. Wait for her to turn around a little bit. Oh, she is with child. She's pregnant. And the two of them shared a boat together. They were the only people on board their boat for their 2 to 3 hour rental. And that was the child that Diana gave birth to that she named Michael.
Dude, I mean, that guy, how many, when these things keep popping up, I you know he had to say to his wife, hey, it was only this one time. You know he had to.
Both said that. Like, it was once. Like, sorry, we it's the first time. I just met him. We were drunk. Whatever.
Yeah.
Years.
And they're saying to each other, they're going, his wife and her husband are going, I thought you told me it was just this one. Didn't you just tell me it was just one time and one time only?
No. It is a mess. So, yep. I just want to know who the kid is or whose kid.
Now you got to have that right now. We got to test the blood and the whole works now, right?
I'm not so sure. Apparently a lot of our audience is tired of this. So maybe no one cares about Mike Vrabel and Diana Russini anymore. Of course, our resident Patriots fan, Rob, is tired of this because he wants to make sure Mike Vrabel is going to be coaching again and not going to lose his job. Over. That's the price you pay. Like, people have affairs all the time. When you're celebrities, this is how this is going to work. So I'm not going to let those cheaters get away with it.
Yeah, you're not done with these two, are you?
No, the internet's going to keep coming up with stuff, and it's going to keep finding me, and I'm going to keep bringing it up on this show.
I'll go back to their high school days when they got together, too. So don't worry about it. There's more to come.
That's so good. The pregnant wife, too. Naming the kid Michael. It's diabolical.
Boy, his wife is going, listen, I thought you told me it was just this one time. Every time I turn around, one of my friends, I mean, that alone means – You got to get going because that alone, that, you know, my friend Susie told me that you, what? I mean, it's coming at him every night. He doesn't.
Sounds like Deanna Russini was coming at him every night.
Yeah, she was coming at him every night.
It feels that way. So there's that. I love it. I think it's awesome. Deanna Russini, I don't know how she gets another job as an NFL insider again, but someone may hire her. I don't know. She's a big name.
She knows how to get the scoop.
Right. She'll get clicks. She'll get clicks. She'll get impressions. So, like you said, she does whatever it takes to find the story, it appears.
Absolutely, man.
I'm sure there's other rumors coming our way with those, too. One more video here before we get to why today's not so bad. Got a little... I don't know if this is road rage because no one got out of their car. We've shown some clips on this show where, you know, people will take a baseball bat to another car. People will punch a rear view mirror off of a car. Someone will flash a gun in somebody's face, whatever. No one got out of the car here. This is just a little moment in Dallas trying to merge near the 30-45 split near downtown Dallas. And we got a little trade and paint going on here.
Yeah, so
I'm getting a black Audi in this red convertible. They couldn't decide whose turn it was on this merge, and they are bumping and grinding, sir.
Ooh.
Who's in the right here?
Let me see who's the one on the inside. Just give way. There's nobody behind you. You can go ahead and break up a little bit. Now, I don't like people that try to jump in there like that, but I'm not going through all of that. I'll just slow down. There's nobody. There's that. The person behind him is far enough behind that I can slow up and let that person on through. I always think maybe this person has an emergency. All they're trying to do is get there 5 minutes sooner than they would. But I'm not going to get my. I'm not going to hit my. Have somebody hit my car. I'll just back away.
This is like 2 seconds.
Yeah, I'm going to back away.
This is two lanes going to one, and it's like, okay, either you're slightly ahead or you're slightly behind.
Right.
And these cars, I mean, it's like they'd rather hurt their car than to. Nope, they're going to go first.
No, yeah, that's ridiculous. As stubborn as I can be about drivers like that, I'll go ahead and back away from it.
Just merge. Like, and you should do the zipper form. This video is not long enough to know like what happened before. The zipper is the way to go with something like that, where it's one car from one lane and one car from the other lane in a merge. And that's
just slide in. Yeah.
Yeah. You just alternate who goes. So if someone broke the rule of the zipper, then okay, I get the frustration, but this doesn't, I don't know if this is this here. This is just black car trying to merge and red car Steelers fan. You see, they got that Steelers bumper sticker.
Yeah, you're not getting in here, Cowboys fan.
Saying, we can't accept that.
So now they got to go to get the paint done. It's going to cost them about $3,000. It's all scraped up. No, just go ahead and hit the brake a little bit. Let that person slide in. They're in a hurry. Oh, I'm in a hurry too. That'll be the thing. Well, I had to get some. No, you can back away.
You're in a hurry to sit in rush hour traffic in Dallas?
Yeah, because once you even merge there, you're going to hit it. It's still going to be
backed up. You're going on to 30 or 45. Good luck.
Yeah.
You'll be sitting there for a while anyways. So,
but yeah. Sometimes people feel like they got to do what they got to do. I was here first. This is just what's going to happen. I'd rather for you to hit my car than just to back away from this. Or even to keep it down the outside lane. That guy could have slowed down, let that red car just go, and then slip. There was nobody behind him close enough.
The funniest part about road rage, and my dad always says this, it's like all you have to do is just move your right foot like 6 inches to the left. That's all you have to do. And instead, people freak out and lose their minds. People get killed over this stuff when literally all you have to do is move your foot 6 inches to the brake, and that's it.
And then let somebody go or do whatever you have to do. If they're in a hurry, let it be them that's in the hurry.
I know.
So what?
All right, real quick, why today's not so bad.
I had a road rage when the guy wanted me to run over the baby ducks. That's been my
approach. Yeah, you did. You've had some road rage incidents that you've talked about on this.
Yeah, the baby duck one was out here where I am on out here in Dripping Springs was the worst, where the guy was screaming at me. He wanted me to run over a gaggle of ducks going across the street, and I slowed down, and he zips behind me, and then I get behind him, and I'm blowing the horn at the stop sign, and I'm waiting for him to get out because now I'm between. If he comes out of that truck, I'm about to squish him. I'm about to pin him into his truck over the ducks. And that would have been over the ducks.
You were about to kill a man over little duckies.
I wasn't going to run over the ducks.
Maybe the guy didn't know there were ducks there.
Possibly.
Maybe he thought you were just stopping in the middle of the road. It's like,
yeah, what do I do? Stop and just, I don't just stop in the middle of the road.
Well, some drivers in their 70s.
Hey, be careful with that.
Perhaps we just stop in the middle of the road. I don't know. Yeah.
The reason why I'm stopped, I may have stopped. I don't stop for rattlesnakes or squirrels. I stop for the duckies.
You stop for ducks.
I don't swerve. I don't swerve.
Ducks and kids, but if you're not adults and not other animals, right?
Yeah, if you're a grown-up crossing that road and you're a grown man and I hit you, that's your problem. Why are you crossing the road not quick enough?
Hey.
If you're a kid, I'm going to slow up. I'm not swerving for squirrels. I do swerve. I put these brakes on for the ducks.
Right. Hey, the Isley brothers were playing. I was listening. I wasn't paying attention to your ass. You shouldn't have been crossing the street.
That's right.
Remember that. Why Today Matters. Hey, happy birthday to our guy Jason's son, Jeremiah, turning 4.
Happy birthday, Jeremiah.
Love that. Hopefully Jeremiah listens from time to time. Actually, hopefully for your sake as a parent, Jason, he doesn't.
Yes.
A couple other birthdays that Jeremiah shares a birthday with. It could have been said better. J.J. Watt, 37 years old.
There you go.
The best defensive players in NFL history. Adrian Beltre, 47 years old. Hall of Famer, one of my favorite Texas Rangers of all time.
Oh, did your Rangers get a win? Oh, they didn't get that win.
No, they didn't. They didn't. The Rangers aren't very good, and the Yankees are very good. You're good-looking. I'm ugly. You're smart. I'm dumb. What do you want me to say, man?
It's early in the season. It's early.
It ain't going to happen this year. I got my one. I said if they win one, I don't care what they do for the next 10 years. We're only in like year three after. So
it's true.
I feel like the deal I made with the devil is coming to fruition, you know?
Yes.
Bill Cowher, 69. Nice. Kemba Walker, 36. Enrique, there it is. Iglesias, 51. I feel like you like his music, Buck.
Not really.
Oh. And Melissa Gilbert, Laura Ingalls Wilder on
Little House in the Prairie.
62 yeah. today.
How old is she?
62.
Yeah. Okay.
And on this day, the birth of Coca-Cola back in 1886, Dr. John Pemberton, pharmacist in Atlanta, served his first glass of Coca-Cola at Jacob's Pharmacy. He sold 9 glasses a day in his first year. They now serve 1.9 billion beverages daily.
We got to taking the Coke out now, though. It's not quite as strong.
They took the Coke out of the Coke.
Yeah.
It's very disappointing. I mean, that's a great decision. Sorry.
Yeah, good decision on their part.
So today is National Have a Coke Day in honor of that. National Coconut Cream Pie Day.
No.
National Give Someone a Cupcake Day. National Military Spouse Appreciation Day. Shout out to you military spouses out there. All right.
And, of course, Mother's Day coming up on Sunday. Take care of your mom, folks.
Take care of your mom. Sue Patrick.
If you got your mom, take good care of her.
So, yeah, amen, amen. I'm very, very fortunate to still have mine. And I know you think of yours on Mother's
All
Day
every year.
Well, hey, get mom a gift at Sue Patrick. Get her tickets to a concert at Centex Tickets. Get her a shake at Hat Creek Burger.
Hey, get her some gummies.
Get her gummies from Early Bird, beer from Altstadt, TV from AV Consultations, a new bathroom from McCall Custom Homes.
Hey, what a weekend that'll be for.
Relax the back chair.
Oh, man.
Buy all of those things for your mom. You hate your mom, so just remember
that's right.
Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. And everyone, enjoy the weekend. Great show, my friend. Thank you, buddy, for tuning in. And we'll talk to you all again on Monday.
Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.